this black hair. The man goes dance, you know, she dances well.
Alrighty, so ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Drive Through HR. I want to thank everyone for taking out a little bit of their day to listen to Nisha and I. We have a fantastic guest on today. Actually, really, really, really smart person that I've had the pleasure of knowing for a number of years now. And we're going to kind of get right into it because Kate has a bunch of knowledge and we only have 30 minutes. So, Kate, if you don't mind, introduce yourself. Tell the audience a little bit about who you are and a little bit of your background.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you very, very much for having me on today, William. It's great. And Nisha, thank you very much. I appreciate being here with you. So my role is I am the president of the RPO line of business for Manpower Group. My personal background is I was an HR professional for 18 years, and I think I've done every job that can be done in HR. And when I was in financial services and led global banking, HR services for global banking, before joining Manpower Group, I was with Fidelity Investments in Boston. I'm from the Boston area, and Fidelity has a great outsourcing business, and I built the RPO for that business. So from there, I went to Manpower Group to build the global RPO business. So that's a little bit about me.
Nice. And, you know, people, if you work in or around HR, you've heard the name Manpower. I mean, you can't work in our industry, anywhere in our industry, and not know the name Manpower. However, you know, Manpower has a breadth and a depth to them that I'm not sure everyone really knows. If you don't mind, break that down for us of
sure.
What you know about Manpower.
Yes, absolutely. And I can really appreciate you saying that, William, because even myself, before I came to work for Manpower, I really thought of it, you know, primarily for its temporary staffing business, which is the Manpower brand. And we're certainly known for that in the U.S., but not everyone realizes that Manpower Group is a $22 billion company. We're in 83 countries of the world, and in many of those countries, we've been there 60 years or more. We have 400,000 clients, and in any given year, we put 5 million people to work, either through temporary assignments or full-time assignments. And so we have certain lines of businesses, and I'll just briefly describe those for you. So certainly what people are most familiar with is Manpower, which is the staffing brand. But we also have a high-end IT and professional business called Experis. I'm sure the HR community would know the name Right Management, which is a career transition firm and a talent management firm. And it is the largest career management firm in the world. And then the business line that I'm part of is Manpower Group Solutions. And that's where we have our outsourcing businesses. So we have something called talent-based outsourcing that we do worldwide. You may have heard of the TAPFIN business, which is our managed service business. And then, of course, Manpower Group's RPO. And people may or may not realize, but Manpower Group has been recognized by industry analyst Nelson Hall and Everest Research Group as being the largest RPO business in the world in terms of market share. And so we currently deliver RPO in more than 45 countries of the world. And last year alone, we filled 160,000 positions all over the world through our RPO business.
Genius. And, you know, you travel the world, you talk to a lot of people, a lot of executives, a lot of senior HR folks. What's your perception on what's keeping people up at night these days from a talent perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. And what's not keeping us all up, in this economy, which is, it's a difficult economy, I think, no matter what business you're in or whatever region of the world that we're in. And for sure, HR people are being asked to do more with less. You know, there that is absolutely the case. And for, you know, I'll focus a little bit on U.S. multinationals at the moment, but we see a lot of U.S. multinational HR leaders, talent leaders, who are being asked to look at their talent on a global basis, not only to help them understand what talent they have, what their talent pipelines are, what they need globally, but it's also about leverage in terms of how the work gets organized, how the brand of the company gets managed globally from an employee value proposition perspective, and to get insight globally to talent. If you look at a regional level, in terms of, you know, say, for example, a HR leader in Latin America who is trying to, you know, run a region for a major multinational company, their challenge is how do they get the talent that they need, which is sometimes extraordinarily difficult, and how do they do that in an efficient way that is cost-effective, and then where they have really great employer branding. So the candidate experience is great and the hiring manager experience is great. And those things put together, that's a tall order. It really is.
You know, I think some of the things they also struggle with is when do I build something and when do I buy something? It's like that old financial construct of,
right.
you know, and it's like I think HR goes through that every single day. Succession. Okay, should we outsource that? Should we bring in technology? Should we build it from the ground up? You know, from your kind of, you have a really interesting perspective on the world. How do they come to grips with whether or not they should build something or whether or not they should buy something?
Sure. And, you know, there is happening all over the world, and gosh, Manpower has so many white papers on this. There is a talent shortage in the world. And what the conundrum is that in a recessionary time where there is so much available people to do work, yet where employers are finding that the right skill set, they have a talent mismatch, they can't get the right skill set to get the jobs done that they need to get done. So while there is tremendous quantities of people who are available to work, it's not the right talent that is needed. And, you know, we just did our talent shortage survey at Manpower Group, and I'll just tell you that in the U.S., 50% of employers report that they have trouble finding mission-critical positions. So if you think about that, that's pretty amazing. And then 34% of global employers are reporting that they are having trouble finding mission-critical positions. So if you have that, half of employers can't find the talent that they need to get the, you know, the real strategic imperatives that they have done. If you translate that down to a level of a head of talent acquisition, then that is an individual who is actively trying to find the talent that they need to get the jobs done. So what we see is it's a question of economics a lot of times in terms of whether you build or whether you buy. And it's also a question of volume. So, for example, if you need, I'll think of something that is, very specific. Let's say you need a patent attorney. And, you know, that's something for sure that you would probably buy. You'd go out and buy that talent, and because that is not talent that you're going to need over and over and over. But if you are an employer that has talent needs in volume and you're perhaps geographically located and your talent pool runs out, or the skill sets that you need are rare and you need them in volume, then you need to start figuring out how you build it. And I can give you some examples of that. So, for example, if you are running a call center and you are a big you know, you can we name the outsourcer, you know, we can pick one that would have a 600-seat call center, right? And they're in a particular geography. It may very well be that they find that they've exhausted the talent pool after a few years. So what do they do? You know, someone I was speaking with runs HR for Latin America for a global bank. And her challenge was, how do I get 75 compliance people in Mexico? If you talk to airplane manufacturers in the U.S. that have manufacturing jobs and they need 50 people every 3 months, how do they make sure that they have that talent pipeline? And that's when you get into a strategy of, oh my goodness, I think in order to satisfy these ongoing predictable needs that our company is going to have, we need to develop a build strategy.
Well, you know, it's funny because the old model of outsourcing used to be draw a circle around what's core to your business and build that internally, and everything else should be outsourced.
Right.
So it's kind of but now the thing is because we move so fast, defining what is core changes.
Right. Well, that's absolutely true. And the other piece is, you know, in this recessionary economy that we've been in quite a few years now, it's, you know, training programs, you know, college programs where they would, you know, bring in students and train them. You know, we can remember banking programs that might be two-year rotational programs. Very few employers have those any longer. They have not survived the recession. And that is going to and then if you add on top of it demographic issues and educational issues, the talent simply is not there to be found. And so what we are saying to our clients is you really need to do a long-term workforce plan to understand what you need, where in the world you need it, and is it there? And if it's not there, if that talent is not there in the numbers that you need it, you need to start building a plan to get that. And we use a terminology that we call teachable fit. So if you decide that you're going to go for a build strategy, then perhaps you need to look at candidates in a different way, look at them for their potential or other skills that they have that make them a teachable fit for your organization and build around that. And what we're seeing more and more, and, you know, William, you know, I'm from the Boston area, and there was just a huge conference in Boston led by MIT about that, about teachable fit and how we need to figure out, are there public-private partnerships between government, education, and employers that could address teachable fit? And I think this is some of the pioneering work that HR leaders can do to think, you know, to help them get the talent they need in the future.
Nice. You know, from your perspective, Kate, again, you've got a global perspective. What are you seeing in generations? What are you kind of seeing as you travel the world, people kind of dealing with the generational gap or the, you know, all the boomers are all going to retire
right,
on the same
right.
Tuesday, you know,
yeah.
et cetera. What are you seeing from a generations perspective?
Well, we're seeing everything that you think that we would be seeing. So, you know, we have clients who are predicting, you know, that the boomers will retire, and they are absolutely concerned of where is the next, you know, generation of talent going to be, and where are they going to find that? The other thing is that, you know, the demographics in terms of managing the different generations and what it takes to retain different generations, those are all coming to the fore as well, because not only, you know, managing people, so then you've worked so hard to either train that workforce, buy that workforce, get it in the door, how do you retain that workforce? And that varies a lot by generation. But one of the things that we all know is the employment contract has changed. And, you know, where loyalties used to exist for both parties in terms of employability, really that doesn't exist anymore on either side. And so that plays into it too. So it's not only how do you recruit people, and that's a whole other topic on how we find people, but globally. But it's not only how do you recruit the different generations into the workforce and change it, but how do you manage them once they're in the door so you retain the talent that you've worked so hard to bring into the company. And that is a critical issue as well. And you know, I do have a thought on that, if you don't mind, for, you know, something that we're seeing really all over the world for, you know, newer entrants into the workforce and what people are looking for. And you know, you probably know this being in HR as you are, it's not really salary that is the real driver of why people stay. You know, maybe that's third on the list or something like that. But what we're finding with newer entrants into the workforce are two things. They want to participate and have, you know, a say in the work environment and the say the work is done. But to retain people, it's development. So if either through public-private partnerships or through the company itself, if you can offer your, you know, millennials and all of that the opportunity to, you know, earn a certificate or develop them for the next job or the next promotion, career development, that kind of thing, even though these are sort of tried and true standards, very few companies actually deliver on that. And those that do tend to have higher morale and better retention.
Great. I'm going to do a quick reset, everybody. This is Willie Manisha talking to our wonderful guest, Kate Donovan. Well, Kate, talking about retention, that's pretty interesting subject for me personally. And very particularly, you talked about the generational differences and baby boomers are going to retire and then going to hire Gen Y and then the skills gap. So this comes to my mind, you know, does this key motivators for retention, does that differ from generation to generation?
Yes, it does. It really does. And, you know, I mean, I'm not telling you anything new. I mean, this has all been written about, but, you know, the expectations are different, whereas, you know, a boomer generation, as you know, there might have a little more respect for authority, you know, that kind of thing. But for the Gen Y, the millennials, you know, let's focus on the newer entrants into the workforce. They want involvement. They want coaching and feedback. They want to be recognized and they want to be developed. And I think that is the you know, if I had to describe the, you know, the top generational difference is that for our younger entrants into the workforce, they make demands. You know, they have expectations of what they are looking for. And for those folks who have the skills and who are well-educated, they are going to be able to get what they want in terms of, you know, flexibility and environment because they're rare. And I think employers really need to think through who is it that they need and want in their workforce and make sure that the environment that they offer is one that is going to continue to retain. And so, you know, I've said it a couple of times, but it's, you know, it's coaching, it's development, it's involvement, and, you know, creating sort of a flexible environment for people to grow.
Great. That's such an interesting insights. Well, yeah, talking about coaching and then mentoring, I have a suggestion, like, you know, employers can encourage the sort of rewards mentoring among their diverse workforce, right? What's mm-hmm. your take on that?
So you, reverse mentoring, did you say?
Yes.
So do you mean, so having the younger generations mentor the more senior folks? Is that what you refer to specifically?
Yeah, we have a workforce which is of baby boomers and then Gen Y. Some group of employees like Gen Y, they are pretty much expert in, you know, using latest tools
yeah.
and technologies
mm-hmm.
like social media.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, our baby boomers, they are a little more strategic in terms of looking at the bigger picture and then work really strategically. So I hope there is a really good way in terms of rewards mentoring and utilizing that in
yeah.
a way of retaining.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that is a great, great thought, Nisha. And I have a really terrific example. When I was in Europe last week, we were talking about engineering skills. And, you know, engineering skills they're difficult to find no matter where you are. And we saw, and this particularly is in Germany, one company there, I think, has the most amazing idea on reverse mentoring in that they have, you know, call it the baby boomer generation, or indeed people who have recently retired. Let's call them alumni of the organization. What they do in order to get their newer entrants trained is they bring their alumni back and create teams. So they have a name for it that's escaping me, but it's, you know, co-partners or something, but they have a really cute name. Forgive me. I can't remember what it is, but they team up a recent alumni who has retired and wants to work, you know, maybe 20 hours a week with a newer person in the workforce who is an engineer. And so they put the retired engineer and the, you know, the new employee engineer together. And they put them on projects together. So then, you know, to me, that is such an amazing idea in that you get the, you know, the best and brightest, you know, of people who are just coming out of school, but then you bring someone who is their mentor partner on a project who has, you know, knows the company, you know, has years of work experience. And as we think through creative ideas for baby boomers who are retiring, that kind of flexible and creative approach where, you know, say someone is 62 or 63, maybe they don't want to work, you know, 40 hours a week or 60 hours a week, whatever it might be that they need to do, but they don't really want to retire, to be able to tap into that energy by being flexible and offering a program like that. I mean, you can just see the power in something like that for an organization. It's such a win-win.
Kate, I you know, I can't even imagine graduating with my undergraduate right now or coming out from high school and coming out into the job market. What's your take on the youth unemployment, and what do you think we can do to kind of help shore that up over the next couple of years?
Oh, thank you for asking about that, because that, William, is one of my particular passions as an HR professional myself. And you know, I'm sure you all have heard in the U.S., I believe that the unemployment of youth is the highest that it has ever been in our history. And it's 13% worldwide. So that means 73 million people who are, say, 16 to 22, who in past years would have been in the workforce, are not in the workforce. And that has tremendous implications going forward, because our research shows that if youth, you know, young adults don't enter the workforce, they never catch up. And so that has societal kinds of implications. You know, it has benefit implications, it has government implications, it has political implications when you don't have your youth entering the workforce. So that's something that in the world now, even at the World Economic Forums, that is a major topic of conversation because of all of the very serious implications that it has. At a local level, we as HR professionals and we as talent leaders do have an opportunity. And you know, I think of it, and this is sort of something that motivates me, is, you know, doing well by doing good. And so we all know that, you know, if we're in a position where we know that we could do something with teachable fit, entry-level positions, call center positions, manufacturing positions, you know, that kind of thing where you have some volume to the position, HR leaders, absolutely, I think they would find that governments and educational institutions are very, very open to programs that would employ new graduates or high school students in a way that we could get them on the way to careers, to, you know, to well-paying jobs. And you'd be surprised. You know, I mentioned the certificate programs. You know, I was thinking very specifically of something that we have going in Australia, but the government pays for that certificate program. And I know, you know, I talked to different universities. Their competitiveness often has to do with how well able they are to put their graduates to work. And you also have employers who need, you know, people who are skilled. And so if you can have those partnerships between education, government, and employers, there's a win-win in that. And I think employers and HR folks have an opportunity to be leaders and indeed heroes by pioneering that for their company. Not only will they get, you know, they'll get access to a talent pipeline, but they'll do something great for their community. And they may find that it has, you know, real cost-efficient benefits for their company as well. And if we could have people, you know, local people doing that all over the world, that would be, I think, an amazing way to move the needle.
Nice. This will be a quick question because we've got about 2 minutes left in the show, but this is about career planning. To date, you've had a fantastic career, and you've got a lot of gas left in the tank, obviously. Whose responsibility is career planning? Is it the person? Is it the company? What's your take on kind of career management and career planning?
Yeah, you know, that's so interesting. And, you know, I should probably ask you because you have so many people that you speak with as well. So maybe I'll leave you a minute and you could add something to it too. But I think, you know, the traditional resume, you know, that probably is going by the boards. But to answer your question, there is, in my view, no substitute for initiative, individual initiative. And for those people who are forward-thinking and always thinking about what's new, what's next, how can I be there, how can I get there, what do I need, I think those people are going to find that they have opportunities and that their companies will meet them halfway. You know, I know that a lot of times training programs and, you know, tuition reimbursement, maybe they aren't at levels that they may have been in the past. But for those people who take the initiative to put themselves in a thought leadership place in a way that they're really adding value, and that, you know, it takes reading the paper and understanding your environment and staying fresh, you know, maybe taking a language, you know, that you don't have. Those are the people that are going to have careers that don't stop. And there's, your employer will meet you, but there's no substitute for individual drive, in my view.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is a wonderful way to start off your week. Thanks, everyone, to listening to Drive Through HR this afternoon. Kate, thank you for your time. And we're going to go out to a little cure. Everyone, have a wonderful Monday.
Great. Thank you, William. Thank you, Nisha.
Thanks, Kate.
Bye.